me the opportunity in this very historical meeting of the Committee on Health and also the Select Committee of the NCOP on Health and Social Services to first of all welcome all members that made time to be here this morning. Let me start by welcoming the Honourable Minister, Dr. McKeithe, and his whole Department of Health that is represented here today. Let me welcome my co-chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health, Dr. Dlomo. A special word of welcome to our elders. Represented here is Ms. Gro Harlem Broodland and Mr. Ricardo Lagos, together with your compatriots that has joined here. We are very honored to have you with us this morning as we entered a new phase in the country when it comes to the health of our people. Let me then also thank every single member and also the staff for all the arrangements that has been done, all the members that has come out of their busy schedules to attend this very historical meeting. I will hand over to the chairperson, Dr. Dlomo, now.
Thank you very much, my co-chair, Honorable Gillian, who is the chairperson of the Select Committee on Health and Social Science and Social Services in the NCOP. Honorable members of the of Parliament, both houses, our guests who will be introduced so well and formally by our Minister and your entourage, Mr. McKeithe. Our media who are also here joining us, we're grateful that you are here. Our staff coming in to be supporting us and welcome you also. Our dear elders, we are humbled by your gesture to come out from your busy schedule all over the world and decide to come to our country at the time we are focusing on this subject that we are well informed, you know it better than some of us who are just beginning it. There's a saying in Zulu which says, "Indlela ibuzwa kwabaphambili," meaning that your wisdom and experience is key to what we are tasked to drive as South Africans in this process. We have led the world. We have held universal health coverage in your various countries where you come from, and you have been leaders. And we'll take this space today to listen and learn as much as we can from your experiences. As friends of our first democratically elected president, President Nelson Mandela, our listening to you today will take that shape as if we are listening to him and him directly. I would therefore like to ask our members, both the Select Committee members and the members of the Portfolio Committee on Health in the National Assembly, to introduce themselves. When we all finish introducing ourselves, I will also give the minister, who will then introduce, of course, himself, but introduce us, the delegation that is here, because then thereafter you can sit and relax and understand who are these leaders in the world. I don't want to steal the thunder from Dr. McKeithe because he knows them better than me. I saw him hosting them yesterday, so he has educated me who they are, but I think I could leave it to him because he can do it better than myself. We will then, after his introductions of our leaders, give our leaders a space and time to educate us. Thereafter, we'll engage in a discussion. My name is Bongiseni Dhlomo, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee in the National Assembly. You could start here.
Good morning. My name is Elegan Chabele. I serve in the Select Committee on Health. I come from the province of Limpopo. I'm in the NCOP.
Good morning. My name is Anna Kela from Gauteng province. I'm sitting in the LA. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the elders, everybody. My name is Mkholi Sisokacha. I'm coming from the largest province in the country, the Northern Cape. Very vast, but a very small population. I'm serving on the Portfolio Committee on Health in the NA.
Good morning. I'm Kenny Jacobs. I come from this province. Welcome to our province also. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee of Health. Thank you.
Good morning. I am Pumza Jaji. I'm the member of this committee. I have come from Madiba's province, Eastern Cape.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Minister. Morning, our elderly. My name is Nokozola Ndongeni. I'm from Eastern Cape. I'm serving in Select Committee of Health in NCOP. Thanks a lot.
Good morning to you all and welcome to South Africa. We hope you have a wonderful trip. We appreciate you coming to visit us, to have a discussion with us today. My name is Lindy Wilson. I'm a representative on the Portfolio of Health in the National Assembly and I hail from Limpopo.
Good morning. My name is Azina Ismail and I'm from the Gauteng province. I serve as an alternate member on the Health Committee.
Good morning to the Minister and to the Elders. My name is Mari Sukers. I'm from the Western Cape, this province, and I'm an alternate member on the Health Committee.
Good morning, all. Good morning. My name is Philip van Staden. I'm from the province of Gauteng, and I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Health.
Morning to all. I'm Audra Malika. From Mpumalanga, I'm serving to the Portfolio of Health.
Good morning, Dr. Susan Temegwayo, member of Committee on Health in the National Assembly of South Africa from Gauteng. Thank you.
Morning, my name is Lindy Lutsuli. I come from KZN and I serve in Health and Social Service, NCOP.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Naledi Chirwa, and I'm an alternate member in the Health Committee, National Assembly. I'm from Gauteng. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Magdalene Hlengwa. I'm a member of this committee, National Assembly. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Siviwa Gwakhube. I am a member of the Health Committee and I am an MP serving from the Western Cape.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mbulelo Baga from Gauteng. I serve in the Select Committee from the NCOP. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Dalmaine Christians. I'm also a member of the Select Committee, and I serve on the NCLP.
Minister Mkhize, it looks like now we have our staff members there who are always shy to introduce themselves, so we'll take that and let me bring it back to you now.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson of the Select Committee. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee from the National Assembly, and our excellencies, the members of the delegation from the elders and honorable members of this parliament, members of the National Council of Provinces, and members of the National Assembly. It does indeed give us a great honor and privilege to welcome the elders who are here with us. We must say that we have had the opportunity to host them yesterday, and it was an exciting program when we learned from their own insight of the work they have done in their respective countries and all over the world, and we are really feeling very pleased that they've been able to join us this morning. So yesterday we went to Charlotte Macleage Hospital, where the excellencies addressed a gathering of leaders, so civil society, academics, research, and professionals, particularly in the civil service. And so we had a very, very interesting meeting. And thereafter, we had a tour into Krisani Baragwanath, hosted by the MEC, Dr. Masuku. Leading the delegation are two eminent leaders who, amongst the elders, that was a committee formed during the days of President Nelson Mandela. We have this team of elders were basically looking into the issues of justice, issues of peace, issues of equality, issues of universal health coverage, and the leader at the moment of the two leaders, one is the former Prime Minister of Norway, Her Excellency Gro Brundtland, who has been also Director General of the World Health Organization, and she has actually spearheaded a lot of programs which were in the promotion of universal health coverage as part of the WHO. And so I'd like to present to you Excellency Gro Brundtland, who is in the leader of the elders. Then we have His Excellency, former President of Chile, Ricardo Lagos. He again has also had a huge responsibility in moving that country from the dictatorship and establishing a democracy, re-establishing the democracy, and one of his major challenges was also instituting universal health coverage in Chile, and we've also learned quite a lot from his experiences, and I really hope that you will enjoy their address when they do address us. The other members of the delegation also... The team that's supporting and advising the elders is David Nussbaum and Rob Yates, who's also amongst the team. And then, of course, at the back, we've also got Professor Shisana, who is in the war room in the presidency, focusing on issues of health, service issues, issues of social cohesion, issues of fighting against violence in society. Professor Shisana has been part of the whole long journey in the issue of universal health coverage, going back in the early days when she was advisor to the Minister Nkosazana Zuma, Dlamini Zuma, and she was part of what was called the Krumbeck-Shisana Commission, and later became the Director General of the Department of Health. She, of course, has worked on this area of universal health coverage for many, many years. So she is also joining us representing the president. The other members are members from the Department of Health. And so, chairpersons, may I therefore present the elders to your meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mkhize, for that program, for that process that you've just taken us through. We are discussing with my co-chair. We feel that it will really feel like a real address if we allow our members to come, and I will vacate my seat and sit with the minister here at the time. No, you sit here. Yeah. We'll allow each one of them to come at a time from our elders. You know, in my culture, you don't give an elder time to speak. They speak as much as, because the wisdom is endless. So we will listen and listen and listen. In the arrangement that has been made, I will then vacate the seat, and the first elder to come and address us will come and be here. Either sit or stand, your choice, but this is your seat from now. Thank you very much.
I understand now why you said I could also stand, but I prefer to sit anyway. good morning, everybody, chairpersons, parliamentarians, everyone in the room. You know, Ricardo Lagos and I are, as you know now, representing the elders, as we have, and I'm going back a little to the establishment of the elders back in 2007, initiated by Nelson Mandela, as he selected people that he knew from his own life of international and national politics, and I was one of those selected in 2007 to be part of the elders, which was a great honor, and I have been in those 12 years. Now the idea, the name elders, also came from the African tradition of the village, that you turn to the elders when there is conflict or difficulty in the village, you know, then you turn to your elders. So Mandela's idea was the world needs global elders, because it's not always possible to overcome differences between different countries and different issues. So we have from the beginning been given the mandate from Mandela himself to try to help overcome conflict, to promote peace and human rights, and of course equality, justice, some of the things that the minister was referring to is part of that message. Now, Ricardo Lagos and I both worked for the Secretary General of the United Nations in the same years, from 7 onwards, until the big Copenhagen Conference on Climate. We were special advisors to the Secretary General on Climate. I had led the World Commission on Environment and Development before this, that made the report Our Common Future, that created the notion of sustainable development, advocating to the world that we must promote sustainable development, change what is undermining nature, and not making it possible for people to survive and have decent lives. Now, by 2015, the world was finally ready to agree on the Sustainable Development Goals in New York in September that year, and then in Paris to agree on a climate agreement. The elders, we have been promoting the ideals that were given to us from Mandela all the way since 2007. After 20, and we were promoting the climate agreement and promoting sustainable development for those years as part of what we were focusing on. Then when the world had decided finally in 2015, we looked at where can we now try to make a difference. You know, we added to our portfolio universal health coverage, which is part one of the targets of the Sustainable Development Goals. Because what we have seen over the years is that in many parts of the world, the principle that education should be available to all is more fundamentally carried through if you look at the world across the nations. More than health for all or the right to health. That is not in every country a reality. So this is, you know, a missing, this is something missing when you look at where the world is today. We have visited, as elders, India, Indonesia, working on universal health coverage, because in those countries, they have not come in any way far enough. We looked at South Africa, and we realized that the country that we, you know, we came from as elders, and the country that Ricardo Lagos and I from our parties in our countries have been supporting, you know, the struggle for freedom in this country, and nearly 30 years have passed, and you don't have universal health coverage. Well, why not? This has to be fixed. So, which is one reason why we decided, and now your government has been taking initiatives in this very important area. And while we have been planning to come here, the work on the NHI bill has been ongoing, and in, now just a month ago it was presented to Parliament. And of course you are now responsible to try to get it into legislation and into reality, which is why we feel we want to share this opinion and this feeling that this is essential. The people of South Africa deserve, like every other people, the right to health. And that means you must have a health system and a financing system that means it covers everybody, and that the total reform is made in such a way that it does cover everybody, that there is high quality of the health services that are given, and that from primary health care to hospital services and everything else that is necessary in a public health system, that is prepared and planned to cover everybody. Now, the principles that are important is that for it to cover everyone and to have quality service for everyone, it means you have to have a publicly dominated, publicly decided system, and you need to have a major part public financing. Otherwise, it will not be for all. It will be then, you know, a kind of halfway privatized system where the better off are getting the health services they need and the poor are left behind. This is what happens in every country. Until you have a public financing system based on taxation, based on employment, you know, a surcharge on your to your taxation, which is directly added to the to serve the health financing purpose. This can be done in different ways, but the principle that you have available health service and that you are not led into financial major difficulty when you get ill. These are the two main principles of universal health coverage. You should not be forced into poverty because you are sick. And you have to make a system that makes this possible. Now, It sounds great, doesn't it? Not easy always to carry through. It has to be done, though, because the right to health is something that should be self-evident in every society. Now, so I said, it's not, you know, but the thing is, this has been done in many countries. So it's not as if South Africa cannot do it. You certainly can. You are able to do this if it's given priority and if people understand the importance of it. So you have many examples. I mean, Chile is a country that, and Ricardo will be speaking to you about that experience that he has gone through and done. But there are also other examples which are even more recent with regard to carrying through those reforms. Countries that have about the same level of economic development as South Africa has. Thailand is a good example. And we have visited Thailand and looked at their system. They have been able to get a universal health coverage system, and they are using 3.7% of their GDP, and they are covering the whole population. You are using 8.1 at the moment, and you are not covering the whole population. There is inefficiency in the way that the health system is functioning, and you have a number of health insurance companies that have high administrative costs, and you know, it's not an efficient system. So the bill that is presented to you, I believe, you know, follows the thoughts of the main principles that you need to have in a country to be able to promote a correct system, which has been done in many countries. Of course, my own, I can just say that step by step in Norway in the last century, the labor movement and others that supported the idea of the right to health gradually covered more and more parts of the population based on their employment background. So the people who were working in dangerous industries were first covered, and then others with higher levels of health problems than others, the parliament in Norway decided these are going to get covered. So we built a system from that basis. But and then in 1948, after the Second World War, everyone was covered in a national health insurance system. So we never acquired a system of a big sector of private health system. We avoided it because we were early on to give other principles, you know, to get other principles to rule the game. However, you are in a different situation, much like the United States, in my opinion. They are not covering everybody, and the debate is still ongoing in that country. But they have a big private health system, and they are spending nearly 20% of their GDP in inefficient and overuse, even, of health services. So you have a good opportunity, South Africa, to do the right thing and to promote now a new system that will benefit all. Thank you so much.
Let's thank the elder, and I think what we will do, we will come back with the discussion. Let's first allow the other elder to come to the front and introduce to us your story. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am, for the honor to speak to this very selected health committee of the South African Parliament. And let me tell you that it's a difficult task to talk after Grob Rundvall. but we will attempt to do something in that connection. And let me tell you that probably I don't have the credentials of Grow. I'm somebody that at in particular moment fight against Pinochet's dictatorship. Later on we have a transition, a very difficult one. As I used to say to my Spanish friends, you did the transition to democracy after Franco's death. We did transition to democracy with Pinochet alive and during 8 years commander-in-chief of the army. That's quite a difficult thing. But after saying that, I became president in the year 2000, 10 years after the defeat of Pinochet and after the plebiscite that we have. And I became president, and for me, the question of health was a pending task, because the neoliberal economic system introduced by Pinochet was very difficult to dismantle. And let me tell you that it's true. There were two major areas in health. Primary health care and hospital services are two major areas that has to have accomplished in each of them. In the year 2000, primary health care in Chile was only 12% of the health budget. And the other thing was hospital services, mostly. And the first thing that we decided was to increase during my 6 year time as president from 12% to 30%. Because I thought that was primary health care. If you are successful there, then the demand of hospital services will decrease. Number two, which is very important, what about the rural areas? And number three, what about the capacity to solve the problems at the primary health care level? What is the, how much resolution can you accomplish there? If you need to have some blood analysis or some x-ray, can you do that at the primary health care, or are you going to send to the hospital? And to, when you say, what is the degree of resolutivity, how much resolution you can have at the primary health care? And that means how many physicians, how many specialized physicians you have? Do you have x-ray? Do you have a capacity to some blood analysis? And it's quite different to do it there, or you have to walk 10 kilometers, 100, sometimes 200 kilometers to go to the hospital. My goodness, this is the reality, and this is what you have to address. And particularly when you have areas of poverty, you have poverty also because the right to health is something that is just written in the Constitution, but it's not a reality in everyday life. This is the point. So the first issue was, how much are we going to be able to devote to primary health care? That was our major element. And let me tell you, to some extent, you never succeed really, but to some extent, you can move the frontiers of what is possible to get. And number two, with regard to hospital services, yes, it's true. In all of our countries, we have the hospitals. We have the physicians, the nurses. We have the people that is working there, and that's it. You provide that. Yesterday we were able to be in Johannesburg, and that all hospital that used to belong to the British Army, that now is in the middle of Soweto. What a wonderful thing you have accomplished there. But the question is, everybody can get services when you need it? And then the big issue is, up to now, you can have two kinds of public policies with regard to health. One is the public policy that means I will provide hospitals, physicians, etc., etc., and you go to the hospital and you get what you want. The other way is to say, can I think from the point of view of the one that is going to need to go to a hospital? To what? When appendicitis? A woman, a surgery for mom because of cancer? In other words, it's one way to supply services. It's a different way to take into account what is going to be the demand of the population. I need a surgery. I need that the physician will take care of me, will tell me what do I do. And if I don't get that, normally my entrance to the hospital services is through emergency. Because you fail, then you have to go to emergency. Primary health care, if it is successful, and you are going to send to a hospital, and you are take care immediately, then the system is working. What do we have in Chile? Long, long waiting list. And the hospital was there, sometimes a nice hospital, sometimes very good attention. Nobody will complain once they are enter in the hospital. Once that you are there, you have a sense that they are taking care of you. The problem is, how are you going to be there? How are you going to be accepted? And therefore, we decided to be very honest. How many of the hospital services that you require, actually today, we are in a position to say, yes, everybody will be accepted to the hospital? In how many diseases we have the system in such a way that you can solve the problem? And in how many diseases you are unable to solve the problem because we are far, far away of being able to accept everybody that will require those services? So, the program that we did was to say, look, this is what had been done in primary health services. This is number one. But number two, with regard to hospital services, we will try to be very honest. Yes, I know, we have to attend everybody. But if we are unable to attend everybody, then let's see, what do we need to do to be able to attend everybody according to the different diseases that we have? And at the very end of the 100% different pathologies or diseases that we have to attend, in how many of those pathologies we can attend 100%? And in order to implement and to quote unquote, because it's not easy, to do a reform like this. Why? Well, because we have a system very similar to the one that you have here. We used to have 75% of our population being taken care of by the public sector. And 25% go to the private sector and the private insurance. Here you have, I understand, something like 84 to 16. Okay. That was our problem. And our problem, we thought it was possible to solve if we were able to have just common fund with the public and the private with regard to particular diseases that are going to be attempted for everybody. When I say, for instance, dialysis is for all, and I will attend for all, then how much that means? How much from the public, how much from the private. This is what our law that we sent to Parliament says. Nevertheless, opposition parties decided, no, sir, you cannot put together those two funds because you are expropriating, quote-unquote, the money that the private sector is putting. You cannot put those together. Therefore, I have a deficit immediately in my... Let me be very clear. If you don't have those two things together, then that means that the only way to finance the whole thing is with more taxes and more income for the public services. And we have to do that. Very clear, we have to do that. Number two, which is essential. When that we were in the middle of the discussion, it was very difficult to explain what was the meaning of that. And the only way was to introduce a pilot system. And we say, look, these three diseases that are going to be covered 100% as a pilot are these diseases. And we introduced those three diseases. And we were able to fulfill next year, the following year, everybody with regard to those three diseases, the waiting list, zero. And what are we going to guarantee? I say we are going to guarantee the right to health. And that means that if the government is not going to provide you, you can claim that and go to a tribunal. I have the guarantee. And the guarantee was regard to particular services in hospitals. We decided that we are going to guarantee 56 diseases. And those 56 diseases meant, after a five-year period, 70% of the total load in the hospitals in Chile. 70% of the total load of the hospital if you are able for those 56 diseases. So, how we introduce the reform? In the first year, three diseases. Second year, five diseases. Third year, 10 diseases. And on the sixth or seventh year, in my last year in government, 2006, we were able to cover 40%. So, the people saw that was possible to go step by step. And this was the way to win the approval by Congress through the pilot. Because how are you going to explain this? And what is the guarantee that we give? Three guarantees. The first one, that you are going to be attended in a hospital with a quality that is able to solve the problem. Number two, we are going to guarantee, we are going to guarantee that you are going to be attended in no more than 3 months' time since the diagnosis has been done by the doctor. 3 months. And number three, very important as a guarantee, that if you are unable to do a copayment that is beyond 10% of your income, then the difference is going to be paid by the government, by the public sector. So we were making a law with three guarantees. And this is what we call auge. Auge means going up. But auge means access, universal, with explicit guarantee. Universal access with explicit guarantee. And this is what we did. Finally, we won. But if you wanted to make sure how many appendicitis are you going to have, the only way to make what is the cost, the normal cost for services like an appendicitis. And this means that you have to done and work with protocols. With protocols. What is going to be the cost? So we are taking when we are introducing this element, that means that you have to make sure, how are you going to be able to make the cost of that particular disease that you are going to solve? And this means then that this is a public policy from the point of view of what is the demand of the society for the number of appendicitis that you need to do in a particular period in my country. So, it's not only a question of having the hospital and the physicians, it's a question of how many services I'm going to be able to introduce. And this is the reason why I think I'm here talking to you today, in a sense that this is what we have to do. I want to be very honest with you. I'm not a physician. I'm just a lawyer and some economist by training. But let me tell you, I understand the job of a physician. I understand when they didn't like the protocols. Who are you, Mr. President, to tell me what should I do? I need a scanner. And I say, do you really need a scanner to diagnose an appendicitis? I have been told that just doing like this, they will know if you need it or not. Therefore, it belongs to my party in Chile, what was at that time the leader of the physicians in Chile. And we had a lot of discussions on this issue. And someday they decided to go to strike. They didn't want the protocols. And my only answer was, okay, that's fine. Tomorrow you will go to strike in the public hospital. But I also demand that tomorrow you will go to strike in the afternoon when you go for the private system. I want to strike morning and evening. What I try to say is, look, if you wanted to go ahead, there are some vested interests. It's very difficult to do some changes sometimes. But you have to believe that what you are doing is because the right to health is not only that has to be written in the Constitution. You have the sense, and especially with those that are mostly poor. Poverty, and we were able to have still. But now we have a per capita income very much like the one that you have here. And I think then that you are to start discussing this issue. The only thing that I would like to transmit is that you will not have the old system in December 31st and to begin with the new system in January 1st. It's a process of step by step. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult to implement a change like the one that you're attempting to do. The only reason why I can be here talking with you and having the honor to be talking here is simply because we're attempting to do. This is a good story, but still we have been unable. We have still, of the three guarantees, the most difficult one is still there are some pathologies that we are unable to, and we have a waiting line. But at least we know exactly where we are, and we know exactly the number of people that has been attended, that is over 25 million during the last, since we started this about 10 years ago. Therefore, all what I can tell you is this has been our experience to go step by step, and I think that it will be essential if you are going to do something of that way to go step by step. This is the concluding remark that I would like to transmit for what has been my experience and learning that what Groblund and told you is just a lesson. And I'm extremely proud that to be part of the group of the elders. And for that reason, I'm happy to be here, because the elders start in this country. Thank you very much.
Let's thank the
Thank you, His Excellency.
I'll speak
here. Let's welcome the chairperson back. And chairperson, let's allow the discussion on the right to health. I think that will be a very good thing. Minister has tagged the right to health on our way going forward in this NHI. So I'm going to hand over to the chairperson of the portfolio committee to chair the session.
Very much to our elders for those wonderful contributions that they have made. Rhyming words step by step, rhyming words, we know where we are because you knew where you started. And you know that you are not yet there. So thanks for that very well spoken, that we are not in a 100-meter sprint, but we are in a journey that has to start somewhere. And you want us to really make a start. Honorable members, I'm sure you would like to comment. We'll really try and keep you to very brief comments, not more than a minute per member. Comments and questions, clarity seeking, we will welcome all that. So I will be taking, Honorable Wilson was the first one, but let me then not take her only alone. Let me just note the hands, so that if I distribute 1 minute, I'm correct to give 1 minute. So Honorable Wilson will be number one. Let me get other names. Okay, you are number two, Chabeleng. So Kacha, you are number three. Jacobs, you are number four. Janji, you are number five. Van Stalden, you are number six. Chirwa, you are number seven. Umkaya Wambaisbawe, we are number eight. Sakers, you are number nine. Kwahube, we are number ten. Shengwa, you are number 11. Honorable Susan Timbegwa, you are number 12. No second round once. So I was correct to say I give you at least a minute. So it keeps us about 12 minutes to comments in between. You start. I can't remember. You remember your number very well. I can remember only Honorable Wilson. Let us therefore follow each other in that order. Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the two elders who've presented to us today. I don't think there's any doubt that in this room, everybody here believes we have to have a universal healthcare system. There's no doubt about that. But sometimes we need to compare apples with apples, not apples with oranges. For instance, Norway spends more on their GDP on healthcare than any other country in the world. It only has a 4% unemployment and is considered one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Chile, only 6.9% unemployment, for only 14% of people living in poverty. South Africa is the direct inverse. Far, far more people living in poverty and a huge unemployment rate. This makes our task a little bit more difficult because we still have to rely on the minority to tax to begin the NHI. So that is a concern because your situations to ours are directly inverse. They're opposites, and I think that's important. And Alder, you said you can't be forced into poverty because you are sick. I think we have a situation here where our Department of Health has been sick for a long time and has actually forced us into poverty. We're facing massive accruals, monumental medical malpractice claims in this country. The department is seriously underfunded and therefore health is on the back burner. How do we address this? And I only have a minute, so in conclusion, because I could ask you about 50 questions, I think. I found what you had to say fascinating. We budget here for a voting population of between 57 and 60 million South Africans. That's our populace. However, we are sitting with close on 20 million either documented or undocumented foreign nationals. who have to be serviced by this health system when they're in the country. Everyone is human. We have to make sure that they are cared for just as well as everybody else. And I know that the plan is to only give them some services, but it's having a huge impact on the health system as we stand at the moment. How did you face that kind of situation, and how did you deal with it? I thank you.
Thanks, Ella Chairperson, and a great thank you to the elders for their input. I've got one question. How much money in both countries, or in countries where there is a universal coverage, how much does government in those countries contribute toward education of doctors and nurses in universities? Because in South Africa, we subsidize, the government gives money to universities for, you know, to educate doctors. And what happens is that some of the doctors, after qualifying, they leave the country and go and work in other countries. I spent some time in, I once went to Canada. And I was in a place where many doctors who work in hospitals, they came from Zimbabwe and South Africa. And I wonder what is happening in their countries. One of them actually came from Limpopo, one of the doctors. And which means then that the money that we invest in people end up saving affluent countries. So I just want to check that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I listen carefully to the elders. And I really want to thank them for the information they've given us when they present the National Health Insurance. And I've listened, Chair, in comparison to our situation in South Africa. And to me, it was clear that we need the National Health Insurance as urgent as possible. Given our present, you know, health system in South Africa, we need to overhaul the whole system. And the answer is the National Health Insurance. And I've also listened carefully when they say we need to get, you know, our base correctly, which is the primary health care system. And I really enjoyed it there. Thank you very much. You have come at the right time. You've given us hope, and we've seen light that the National Health Insurance is the answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Excellency Brundtland and Lagos, for giving us this wonderful explanation. The input from Excellency Brundtland, thank you very much. It's a wonderful input. We appreciate it. And in South Africa, we agree that we need what you call the publicly decided system. And this is the system that we're looking at in terms of the NHI. And also aligned with Alma Ata, we have an emphasis on the primary health care in terms of the bill that is before us. And yes, we will also be delivering services at hospital level. I note in the case of Chile, there was an incremental increase from 12% to 30% in primary health care service delivery. And thank you for taking us through that process, Excellency Lagos. Gave us a bit of a better understanding. We obviously know what is the process that we would want to follow. So I only have one question. I would like to know where you are now in terms of service delivery with regards to your universal health care, and what are the current costs or the percentage of GDP that you're spending at the moment in terms of that universal health care? Thank you,
Chair. And thank you to the elders for such a wonderful input, which puts us in a relatively comfortable position to know that everybody else who's gone through the journey has met some challenges, and we can also go through our challenges and reach the stage you are at now.
We also want to thank you because much as our processes are not the same as yours, but we are definitely taking it step by step. That's why we have phases on our NHI. We want to thank you for stressing again that primary health care is a pillar of universal health coverage. And I am sure all the colleagues here are sitting in better, comfortable position. We know that we have challenges. Are they insurmountable? No, challenges that we can overcome. Thank you very much.
Good morning again, Your Excellencies. Morning, Chair. You're also speaking about the financing of a system through the tax base, which happened in your countries, if I understand correctly. Now, our situation is a bit more different and difficult. As you know, we sit with an unemployment rate of nearly 29% of people who is not employed. And so, therefore, our tax base in this country is getting smaller and smaller. What advice can you give us how to manage that problem to get to the NHI? And then I just want to hear your comments about, we read in the papers that, and documents that Ireland abolished the system after 14 years because it was too costly for them. I just want your input on that as well. And Britain has also now started to show problems on the system which was reported here 2 weeks ago. In the Britain newspapers, it was also reported 3 weeks ago. And then I just want to ask the last one, what impact did the implementation of the system had on your country's economies? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the elders for the progressive inputs. I just want to make a comment or an assertion in regards to how South Africa is peculiar. And this has much to do with the issue that we have a problem with corruption. Most of the things or the agendas and the applications and objectives would have trickled down to the ground, except we have public servants at the helm of delivering deliverables and service delivery to our people. They steal, and there is no accountability mechanism that can be exploited efficiently to hold people accountable. And I'll give an example. There was a clinic in Rustenburg that was undergoing renovations since 2014, and it was reopened around April, May. There was a whole celebration, cutting of ribbons. 2 months down the line, we learned that the maternity ward is non-functional. There is no facilities. There is lack of, and these are things that were made, that financial arrangements were made for, resources were made available for that to be handled. And to date, there has been no accountability, which means do we then go to, when people say that there are challenges and we can overcome them, what they essentially mean is that the challenge is corruption. The challenge is corruption, and it is intense because the people who pay the price for the fact that people want to steal are women and children, and in particular black women and children. In fact, I'm even tempted to say that we must start budgeting for corruption so people can just take from the budget of corruption and not from the other things that we want to give to our people, because it happens, it is sustainable, it is consistent, and there is no repercussion. Nobody in this room can ever subvert what I'm saying right now. It is a problem we have, and it will not be solved because there is no accountability mechanism. There is no consequence for corruption in South Africa. If anything, the only consequence that is currently happening is that if you're still in this department, then you are moved to another department. How do we navigate this issue? How do we exploit the tools that should be given to us as public reps to ensure that people account beyond just being protected by party lines and affiliations?
Thank you so much once again for the progressive input by the elders.
Colleagues, try to stick to a minute, please, because of the other programs. We still have to have the elders coming to reply. I'm not sure whether the department will also want to chip in here, and there's a program of the elders elsewhere in this precinct. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much, Chair, and thank you to the elders for gracing us. We have learned a lot from you guys. But most of the speakers have touched what I wanted to say. But when you go to the clinics, especially in rural areas, you will find long queues, and they will complain about understaff and underbudgeted. So I think one needs to zoom in to the problem at hand. And also, the issue of healthcare, it doesn't come in color, whether I'm wearing red or pink or yellow. It's the problem of everybody. So I think we need to be neutral about it. And everybody, it must be inkinga yakhe, you see, because it affects all of us. Thank you.
Honorable Seekers and Honorable here. I'm sorry for the news, that's my number.
I'm 10, Jefferson. Are you 9? Okay, should I just go ahead? Okay, let me. Thank you very, very much for the presentation. I think there were two key things that for me really stood out, especially in that last presentation around not being afraid to overhaul the health system. And in the first presentation about the deep inefficiencies in our system. I think, as colleagues have stated, we are all in agreement about our commitment to rolling out universal health care in the country. But at the same time, we also have to be realistic about our realities in South Africa, but also have to be realistic about the fact that we spend 9% of our GDP on health care. And so how is it that we are spending that much money and unable to effectively roll out universal quality health care to our people for 25 years? And so I think an honest conversation needs to be had, and perhaps in your engagements with the South African government, you also need to also ask those questions, that your GDP spend is quite high. And so, you know, how is it that we are spending that money, over 222 billion rand on health care, but in an efficient manner? And then just the last thing that I would like to add is I'm sure that the elders have had an opportunity to engage with the legislation that is before this House. And so one of the difficulties that we are having, again, in the details of the legislation is, as my colleague has pointed out, that in South Africa we have a problem of systematic corruption. And so one of the things that we are dealing with as a committee and as Parliament is how is it that we insert within the legislation the requisite checks and balances that will ensure that public money is spent for the public and does not line the pockets of politicians and the politically connected few. And so ultimately I think it's important that we understand that our opposition to certain aspects of the legislation is not our opposition to universal health care or our commitment to health care for the people of this country, but by saying that how we implement it is how it's gonna be what is gonna be important.
We go back to number 9, I think it was Honorable Seekers, yes.
I firstly want to say thank you for the presentation. I think what it does do, it provides us with the opportunity to hear and also for us to have a discussion that is void of all the political noise that sometimes comes with these things. My question, because everybody has asked many of the things that I think is paramount in the discussion around the NHI, given all the challenges that we have in our nation now, specifically the Honorable Ricardo from Chile, what would you say to our nation apart from do it, get the national health insurance rolled out? What would you say should we do as a nation first, you know, given the high unemployment, the corruption, that we're dealing with and the inequalities that we are faced with in this nation. Because it is an opportunity for us, really, in this room, to hear from people that has done it before, but also that has a moral imperative to get it done, what it is that you would say to us. We have a challenge as well that we have a lot of our doctors leaving, and we have human resource capacity in terms of specialists and nurses. How did you overcome that, and how did you, if you had that as a challenge, how did you overcome that, and what would be your advice in terms of us retaining and building capacity around training, specifically within the medical field, specialists and as basic as nurses as well?
Okay. I think we have two more hands, Honorable Thembe Kwayo and Honorable Hlengwa, if I'm not mistaken.
Sorry, my colleague as well, if she's not back, she's asked me to field her questions. Thank you.
I took the round, Honorable Wilson. I was very emphatic. When I said, raise your hands, I took hands up to the last. Those who come in late, no, that has been the trend in my chairing of meetings. We did it with that way. We take one round, and I did mention it. Two more hands, Honorable Thembe Kwayo, Honorable Hlengwa is the last one. Hlengwa.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, our elders, who give us hope in this new era we are facing. But you do all give us hope and give us the strength of making this journey easier for us. But even then, in South Africa, we are experiencing the shortage of doctors, nurses, as well as medicine in our clinics and hospitals. For me, I can say we need very much this NHI more than anything, more especially to uplift the poor of the poor, to serve, to get the right to help. I thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all what has been said. As the last one, obviously it means whatever I wanted to say has been exhausted. But all the same, I'll just start by saying the first elder said, you tend to the elders when there is a problem in the village, of course. And the mandate was to overcome the conflict and also that advocate for development. And one of the things that I can mention in connection with the NHI and whatever, is the fact that you said the system should be publicly decided upon, which means that it should be the public that informs us on what is it that needs to be done, not something that needs to be forced in the minds and mouths of the South African people. So if it's possible, when you go on with the discussions, just ask about such aspects. And Mr. Lagos is described as a tenacious fighter for health reforms and reducing economic inequality, while also championing diversification. And with this, I would like to say, a mention was made on more taxes, as it's going to be a burden for the South Africans, versus more income. How is it possible that when we consider more taxes, taxing the workers more, that there should also be consideration of increasing the income to the level that can match the taxes, as the problem would be and envisaged. And lastly, a mention was made about rural areas as a problem. And definitely, we will have problems in rural areas due to lack of human resource
and lack of capacity. We are talking from experience of the general health sector problems that are experienced in South Africa. So as we go through this aspect, can you also advise on how to keep such problems? And lastly, implementation, evaluation, and intervention should be considered. Thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. May we now allow our elders to comment, respond, and clarify, further if they would wish. We can talk from where you are. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone who has spoken. It is interesting for me to see that so many of the comments and the questions are linked to two things. One which indirectly or very directly about corruption. Now, in my country we have been lucky. We have very little corruption anywhere. But we know that this is, in many countries, a problem. Around the world, you're not alone, but I think you have a bigger problem than many other countries on that. So we are then talking not about NHI, but we are talking broadly about the way the country works. And this is not going to be, you know, the health minister who is going alone, or your bill on the NHI, to find out how you best, across the board, fight corruption. This cannot be a reason not to make NHI. It is a reason for your president, for your parties, for everybody at the provincial and municipal level everywhere to take seriously. You have to overcome corruption. And it has to be done, as you said, by accountability systems, by your legal system, by the way things are made transparent and account, and you have accountability mechanisms. You know, let's take the whole education system, transportation system, whatever you look at, it's as important everywhere. But it is also an occasion for you as parliamentarians to push hard on that issue, even as you deal with this bill. But it is part of a much broader general problem that you need to take seriously. The other thing that came up by several of you is a poor country with high unemployment, with low wages. How are we going to carry this additional, you know, burden or you know, or quality reform that will cost something? Well, you know, many of the countries that introduced national health insurance were very poor, were after war, were in bad conditions when they started implementing these principles. So this is not an argument not to implement rights across the board, because it will also help. You will have higher employment. You will boost the economy by investing in your people. You know, this is a fact that investing in health creates economic growth. This is not just a statement that you can say as a politician. We have a lot of evidence from economic analysis that this is the case. Larry Summers was former Secretary of Finance, Treasury, Secretary of the Treasury in the U.S. And he now has led a group and has come out with the assessment that investing in universal health coverage will pay 10 times, you know, the cost when you look at it in a broader sense. It will boost the economy. It will help your country move forward. So those are my comments on that. But we will speak with the president today, and we will mention that so many of you asked the questions about how are we going to finance, you know, how are we going to also increase wages when they are much too low for having a living conditions that are reasonably or acceptable. You know, so you have a number of issues to deal with. And but the national health insurance system is part of what you need to do, and, you know, kind of clean up your society and move into a better new era with less corruption and with more equality. It will boost your economy as well.
May I attempt to answer a few of the questions? First of all, thank you very much for the way that all of you make some contribution to what was our presentation. I would like to start with the question of poverty and rights. In our case, it's through the primary health care that we try to take care. What about poverty rights? In what sense? Every kid up to 1 year old has to be registered in a primary health care center to take care of him. And at the same time, everybody about 60 or 65 are in a primary health care center till the moment that he or she passed away. In other words, if you wanted, and it's very important, the question, because in many cases, you may have wonderful ideas, wonderful institutions, you establish a decree on that, but nobody knows about the decree. So the more poor you are, much more difficult for them is to know what they are entitled for. And this really is the major problem. I used to be Minister of Education, and I introduced a question about the problem that we have with people that was living in school, simply because if you are in a village close to the ocean, the kids, the males, used to go with the father for fishing, and the girls go with mothers to pick in the fruits in the right season. So we decided to have a scholarship for those that are candidate to drop out. Wonderful. If you are a candidate for drop out, then you ask for a scholarship so that you will remain in the school and you give the money to the parents. Wonderful idea. To talk about scholarship was too much for the amount of money, but anyhow, it wasn't a scholarship. But how many people knew about that? It became for me to be president to discover that very few. I mean, how are you going then to entitle those that are extremely poor, so poor that has no idea what are your rights? And this is something that has to be taken at that level, I would say. The other point that was mentioned was about the money. It's true that apparently when we had the AUGE, the particular program, we have a tremendous deficit when the two funds cannot go together, as I mentioned. And the only way, first we sent a bill with some taxes on alcohol and tobacco, was rejected. Finally, the only thing that was accepted by the opposition parties was to increase the value-added tax, which is extremely regressive, as all of us know. My only explanation to the people was, look, this tax is very regressive, but about 80% of the tax is going to be returned to those that need more through the question of the primary health care centers plus the AUGE. In other words, the only way was, and 2% of the value of the taxes is quite an amount. Our total value added tax in Chile is 19%. Because of that, 2% goes to reform on health. The other question that is important is, what about your inventory of resources that you have? If you want to make calculations in protocols on what is going to be the way to do it. And this, I think that it's important to take into account that what is going to be the human resources and the specialist doctors that we need. And this is the question of about the training of future physicians, what are going to be the specialization of those, and what is going to be then the upper income groups, what they are going to need, but the lower income group, what they are going to need in terms of the different specialists. And this is something that we are still fighting for. The final point that I would like to say, that the question is that, how are you going to give more in those areas that are less opulent? You have to discriminate in favor of those that have less in order to make the level of the field equal. And this is essential in education and in health. The final comment is that even though our resources expend in Chile have nothing to do with the resources that are expended in the U.S., nevertheless, the life expectancy in Chile is bigger than the life expectancy in the U.S., in spite of the fact that the U.S., they spend much more on health of what we spend. And it seems to us that the fact that our life expectancy is above is essential. Final point that has to do more with the issues of social security. In what sense? The question of life expectancy. Life expectancy in Chile is much higher in the 50% of the population with better income rather than the 50% of the population with lower income. And therefore, when we are talking about, and we are pending in this issue, as many other countries are pending, if you have that they have with the have not, has different life expectancy, but when the moment of retiring, then you are going to make a division, which is the life expectancy in general. And that means that the bottom 50% has a life expectancy in numbers of year smaller than the number of year for those that are in above 50%. So if you don't make a distinction, that means that the poor are going to subsidize to the rich. If the life expectancy, I'm exaggerating, if the life expectancy is 76 versus 84, well, needless to say, that if you make a division by 82, because that's the average life expectancy in Chile, 82 years, well, that means a subsidy from the poor to the rich. And it has been very difficult to introduce this discussion in my country. And I think that in most countries, this discussion doesn't exist. And I think that the next job, it should be, how are we going to make a distinction because life expectancy is different given the socioeconomic groups in every country. I don't think that the situation that we have is the only one. But I think that if we are talking in this sense, this is important. And with regard to the issue of corruption, I think that Agro, as usual, did a wonderful job answering that. Final point, I think that there are several issues that probably I have been unable to talk about. This is a problem when you have been president. Because when you are president and they ask you a different question, then you say, Minister, would you please answer? And now my problem is that I have no minister to ask for an answer. Thank you very much, sir.
Let's appreciate that prompt, honest answers and advice. Members, I'm going to allow our Honourable Minister to give his final remarks. After the Minister, we will close the meeting. We will ask all members, plus our guest, to go down to the entrance of the National Assembly for the photo opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I must also say that I spent the whole day yesterday with the elders, but today is like the first time I do. The amount of experience and knowledge that they've shared has actually, you know, been quite impressive for me, and I also must say that I've learned quite a lot of new things since yesterday, although we discussed the same issue yesterday, so I've really enjoyed it. And I must also say that they have responded to all the questions. I think, Excellencies, you will also notice that while some of the questions were directed at you, but actually the members were discussing amongst themselves. They were basically, this is a South African discussion. And I think it is fair because they are here as members representing diverse constituencies in South Africa, and therefore they have to be out there raising the issues. And so you would have had many of the members raising issues which really we should be facing amongst ourselves. But I want to just thank you for the comments you've made. Let me just say briefly that I have to account to these two committees who are here, and some of the issues that they've raised are issues that I believe it's important to just comment on, to say that indeed we will continuously be engaged with these committees on these issues. The issues of the shortage of staff, the shortage of medicine, the unacceptable level of infrastructure are real. And those, when the members raise those issues, they are actually raising issues that we have prioritized as a basis on which we are going to be instituting the health reforms to improve the health services. It's got to be sorting out the issue of staffing, quality of healthcare, infrastructure, supply of medicine, and the work ethic within civil service. The issue that's been raised about corruption, again, I want to agree with elders. The members here have to be very vocal. They've got to work together with government and fight to ensure that we can ultimately, account for whatever is being done by government to deal with corruption. There's no other way, and we accept that. And in the case of the National Health Insurance, we've actually proposed from the Presidential Health Forum, from the Presidential Health Summit, a kind of anti-corruption forum that will work to oversee not only the health services but the National Health Insurance Fund. And this will have to constitute special investigation unit, civil society, and other groups, where there are groups which have been very vocal in civil society, Corruption Watch, Section 27, and so on, and also Hawks, other Financial Intelligence Center, National Prosecuting Authority, all of whom must work together, look at the technology that will actually observe as the transactions are moving, to be able to respond quickly to actually try and stop corruption. For example, what the banks do, they would actually, check if there's a transaction, they'll check whether in fact the owner of the holder of the account is aware of this thing, and then they give a feedback quickly to say, if you don't know, just phone this number, and that kind of thing. So those are some of the kind of things that we're looking at. There are currently some commissions that are going on. We hope that we'll get lessons out of those, and then that will be proper action. But I think nothing beats consequence management, that once somebody has been found, and there must actually be action on those. And when the members are raising those issues, I think we must accept that it's a real issue in South Africa. The other issue that has been raised quite prominently by His Excellency President Lagos is the issue of strengthening primary health care. There is no other way out of it, and we must agree that education is part of it. Water, sanitation, agriculture, all those departmental inputs are actually what goes into creating wellness amongst our people, and therefore that becomes very, very important. And of course, issues of prevention, early screening of diseases, early interventions, all of these are actually the anchor that we are focusing on our health services. And the rest of the issues that we have raised, I think we have got almost a similar experience. The demand from those who can afford is a huge demand. And sometimes people assess the goodness of the health services by whether they can find a professor if they want to be treated by a professor. And not necessarily whether, in fact, the intervention at the time it comes is actually what's suitable at that point. So those issues are indeed for us very important. And rural areas, attention there too. We've also got no other choice. We've got to focus on those that are underserved, and people have got to walk long distances, and their primary healthcare setting are more of a challenge, including those in the informal settlement. So those issues are for us the real issues. What I also want to be very grateful for is how the excellencies have explained the issue of the economy and creating universal health coverage. That many of the countries were poorer when they instituted that. I think that's important. One member has asked, well, we are spending 8.4% of GDP, so why haven't we been able to improve the health outcomes? And the issue is simple. There's distortions in the system. 15% of the people are consuming almost 50% of the resources. That's what needs to be sorted out. And that to sort that out, you need to create a slightly different approach. Honorable Labos says you must discriminate to create equality. That's redress. That is how you get to justice. In this case, we're saying that the resources are there already spent on health. And when they are there, they are being improperly distributed. We've got to go in and make sure that there's a better distribution. That's social solidarity, and that's where the issue is. We're chatting here between myself and the honorable member that, look, if this national health insurance or universal health coverage is successful, that means you'll have the higher cost at the end of the lives of people, and that's a fact. They were saying that the younger ones, the healthier ones, are going to subsidize the health services so that when you are later on in your life, you need it more, you're going to get more attention. And that's the experience in all the countries. And in this case, therefore, we need to institute that social solidarity, because that's how South Africans must be able to support each other. And there are more studies. We did quote some of the study, for example, done in this continent now, Honorable Brundtland, that in fact was done by your successors in WHO about the impact of morbidity, mortality in the GDP of the continent. We gave the sense of figures that in fact it's a real issue. There's a direct relationship in case of the health outcomes and the life expectancy and the conditions of health of our people together into the GDP. So it's something that we have to actually face up to at the end of the day. So I hope that the members, as they've indicated, that they are all in support of universal health coverage. I think they can give us support for the bill. It's a small difference between us. The principle is accepted. So let's move on. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairpersons, and I want us to really commend the elders for their leadership, for their guidance, for their emphasis, and really we want to say we do appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I will hand over for the word of thanks to Dr. Dlomo.
Thank you very much. Before we put you at close for the photo shoot, just to give a sense of comfort to our elders, the Minister has really brought the bill to us now in both houses, the National Council of Provinces and the National Assembly. We have deliberated on it as a National Assembly Portfolio Committee, and we have put an advert last Friday for South Africans there now to say, here is the bill, look at it. And by law, we are expected to do that for 30 days, and then only 30 working days, only after the 12th of October, we will be indicating dates and places in the country where we are going to be doing public hearings.
So your coming in there has greatly supported us in an unmeasurable way. We'd like to thank the Minister, Dr. Zolim Kiz, and his team for really enabling this meeting to take place, and we are grateful for that. We also like to thank the Office of the Presidency that was also partly involved in facilitating the elders to be here with us, our staff members who have really prepared this meeting. We thank the media, who probably some of them as we go down might catch one or two. Please don't delay our elders. We want to take a photo shoot, but you'll be free to accompany them. I'm sure they are accompanied by very good gentlemen here. They would allow you to ask one or two questions as you walk with them. But now, if we can maybe allow that we walk down, or some of us may get into the lift, walk down into the entrance of the National Assembly, it would be a good way to be staggered. It will remind us that this NHI will come in a step by step. So others will be on step one, others will be on step two, and others will step on step three. So our NHI is going to be step by step. Thank you very much. The meeting has come to a close.
Sorry.